You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The night was clear and the moon was yellow and the leaves came tumbling down. These are the lyrics to the version of the truly American blues ballad, Staggalee, that I first heard sung by Lloyd Price. And since then, I've come across many versions because the song is one of those early blues and folk songs that just kept on being sung and added to along the way. Like the House of the Rising Sun and the Ballad of John Henry, these old ballads start with a real story. And the story's not often a known one, and not always clear. When you start to search for that story, the history of it slowly begins to come clear, one piece at a time, like trying to put a large puzzle in place, until in this case, you find yourself standing on a street corner in the neighborhood of Deep Morgan in St. Louis on Christmas night in 1895, right at the moment when Stack Lee Shelton pulled the trigger of his .44 and shot Billy Lyons in a fight over a Stetson hat.
The night was clear, and the moon was yellow, and the leaves came tumbling down. I was standing on the corner when I heard my bulldog bark. He was barking at the two, we were gambling in the dark. It was Stanley and Billy, two men.
Welcome to another episode of 1001 Heroes, Legends, Histories, and Mysteries. This one, titled The Story of Staggalee, is from our history series and takes us on a journey into the past to find the real story behind the legendary blues ballad, Staggalee. As it turns out, the basis of the song is true. Stack shot Billy in an argument over politics. One was a Republican, one was a Democrat, and a Stetson hat. The story of Staggalee has been sung now for over 100 years, and it's been covered by hundreds of artists, mostly in the blues and R&B genres. One version gives us the story, told from the point of view of the bartender, of two men, one named Staggalee and one named Billy, who were gambling with dice late one night, and Staggalee threw a 7. Billy swore that he threw 8. Then Staggalee told Billy, "I can't let you go with that. You've won all my money and my brand new Stetson hat." Staggalee, as the song goes, went home, got his .44, and returned, standing in the barroom door, gun in hand, while Billy begged for his life, saying, "Please don't take my life. I've got 3 little children and a very sickly wife." Staggalee shot him anyway, according to the bartender's story. He shot him up so bad that the bullet went through Billy, and broke the bartender's tinted glass. That's the version that Lloyd Price took to number one on the pop charts in 1959. Then there's the blues versions, the most popular of which was sung by Mississippi John Hurt. And that story goes like this.
Stagger Lee was a desperator. And you know, Stagger Lee, him and his partner, they robbed the coal mine one time. Get me right. All right, they go down the coal mine. The boys had got paid off from having a little game. Money all over the floor. Stagger Lee and his partner got himself placed. It says, hey, boys. They said, yeah. So what if old Stagger Lee and them was walking here? One guy, bit at the line, had stole his Stetson hat. And he thought everything was all right. Didn't make any difference if it was bit at the line. He picked up a .44. He says, ah. Says, Stagger Lee's gun won't shoot a bit harder than this. About this time, Stagger Lee's partner knocked his hat off with a bullet. See, he got his nerve. He dropped his gun. This guy, he has a wife and two children. He come here begging, please don't take my life. I got two little babies and a darling, loving wife. Oh, yeah? Another guy went to take it up, you see? See what I mean? He reached for his gun. Bullet sended him right between the eyes. All right, that settled him. And when they got the money and was going on, Stag's partner was crying. He says, oh, you got wheat.
Billy Lyon, who thought himself to be a bad man, was part of a gang that had just robbed a coal mine, and they were gambling with the money they had stolen. Then Stagger Lee arrives, and Billy somehow steals his hat, which was considered to have some magic qualities to it. Stagger Lee kills Billy with his .44, shooting him four times. Then the song takes us to the trial, and Stagger Lee gets the rope. The two songs only have a few things in common, Stagger Lee and Billy, the caliber of the gun, a .44, the Stetson hat, and the fact that Stagger Lee shot Billy. Did it happen at all? Was there a Stagger Lee? And what did happen? Where? And why? There is a real story here, and it's quite different than the ones that have been sung all these years. We'll get to the story in just a minute. "1001 Heroes" is enjoyed worldwide and can be found at all podcaster sites like iTunes and podbay.fm, to name a few, as well as our website at www.1001storiespodcast.com. You can also chime in at facebook.com/1001heroes, H-E-R-O-E-S. We really appreciate it when you share our show with others. That's how we grow. And now, our story.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
St. Louis, Missouri, by the late 1880s, was the fourth largest city in America, following New York, Philadelphia, and Chicago, and hosted more rail lines than any other city in America. Manufacturing was booming, and people from all over the South were coming to St. Louis to find work. Blacks in post-Civil War America found it rough going. Segregation was still in place, black schools were rare, and the fight for equal rights was only beginning. In the black neighborhoods of St. Louis, neighborhoods like Deep Morgan, which was centered on Biddle Street in North St. Louis, ragtime artists and blues artists flourished, along with saloons and brothels and their assortment of colorful characters. Stack Lee Shelton was one of these colorful characters. He had been born in 1865 in Texas and eventually migrated to St. Louis, where he became a carriage driver, where he soon earned a reputation as a pimp and a gambler, and also served as a part owner in an all-black 400 club, a political and social club with a very dubious reputation. According to John and Alan Lomax, who researched the origins of the song and were the first people to get a recorded version of it, Shelton got the nickname Stack from a riverboat called the Stack Lee, owned by the Lee family of Memphis. He was described by Cecil Brown, author of Stagalee Shot Billy, as anything but a common pimp. He belonged to a group of pimps known as the Macs. The Macs weren't just urban strollers. They presented themselves as objects to be observed. When Stack Lee Shelton entered Bill Curtis's saloon on Christmas night, 1895, he was dressed in a pair of tailored shoes known as St. Louis flats, with almost no heels and toes pointing upward. On the top of the shoes were tiny mirrors that caught the electric light hanging overhead and sent sparkles upward onto the ceiling. A pair of dove-colored spats covered Shelton's shoe tops. Gray striped pants hung over his spats. The flaps of his black box-back coat fell open to reveal an elaborately patterned red velvet vest and a yellow embroidered shirt with a celluloid standing collar that kept his chin high in the air. Knuckle-length sleeves almost covered the gold rings on his manicured fingers. His left hand clutched the gold head of an ebony walking cane. The other hand held a long cigar in his mouth. On his head was a high roller, milk-white Stetson. Along the hat band was an embroidered picture of his favorite girl, Lily. Shelton then spotted his friend Billy Lyons standing at the bar and joined him for a drink. Lyons worked as a levee hand and didn't dress with the flash of the Max. He was not a wealthy man, but he was well-connected. His sister was married to Harry Bridgewater, one of the richest men in St. Louis and a leader in the Republican Party. Both men drank and talked amiably most of the evening, but when the discussion turned to politics, the exchange became heated. Billy was a Republican like his brother-in-law. Stack Lee was aligned with a growing faction of St. Louis Democrats. At one point, Shelton grabbed Lyons' derby hat and broke the form. Lyons then demanded 6 bits from Shelton to replace it, and Stack refused. Then Lyons pulled Stack's Stetson hat off, at which point Stack pulled out his Smith & Wesson 44. Remember the lyrics from the Jim Croce song, You Don't Mess Around With Jim? They go, you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit into the wind, you don't pull the mask off the old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim. Well, in St. Louis in 1895, you didn't mess around with Stack. When the gun came out, the piano stopped playing, and the patrons headed for safety. Stack threatened to blow Lyons' brains out if he didn't give the Stetson back. Then he hit him over the head with his gun. At that point, Lyons, the helpless victim of too many drinks and a deadly dose of pride, pulled his knife, calling Shelton's bluff, and said to Shelton, "You cockeyed son of a bitch, I'm going to make you kill me." Then he charged Shelton, but Shelton wasn't bluffing. He shot Billy Lyons in the stomach, coolly grabbed his Stetson from Lyons' hand, and walked out of the bar as if nothing had happened. Billy Lyons was moved to an infirmary, then to a hospital, where he died around 4 a.m. that morning. Stack Lee was home at 911 North 12th Street, sleeping it off, when the St. Louis police came to arrest him, then taking him down to Chestnut Street Station. 911 North 12th Street, which was Stag Lee Shelton's house, was still standing a few years ago, although it was recently boarded up and for sale. It's the only house remaining on the block, directly across from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch building. About 25 years ago, an alderman named Bruce Sommer ran a restaurant there called the Sommer House, with live music, including old-time performers Cousin Curtis and the Cash Rebates, and blues singer Tom Hall. Tom was not aware that he was singing in Steiger Lee's old house. If you have any recent information as to what is currently standing at that address in St. Louis, please join us at facebook.com/1001heroes and leave us a message. Your feedback will be greatly appreciated. Shelton was now in need of a high-priced lawyer, and he had the money, so he hired Colonel Nat C. Dryden, one of the finest criminal lawyers in St. Louis. The trial opened on July 15, 1896, and lasted 2 days. Dryden argued that Shelton had killed Lyons in self-defense. The jury deliberated for 22 hours, but could not agree on a verdict. The final polling had 7 jurors for second-degree murder, 2 for manslaughter, and 3 for acquittal. With a hung jury, Shelton needed to be retried. The judge presiding over that trial was Judge Nathan B. Young, who was the first African-American circuit judge in the state, and he had talked to a lot of people who knew Stack Lee Shelton and Billy Lyons. According to legend, the judge, who lived to age 100 or thereabouts, said that Stack had gone to a hoodoo woman and obtained a spell to increase his sexual prowess. The talisman for that spell was his Stetson hat, and the fact was well known in that community. So when Lyons snatched that hat off Lee's head, it was a serious insult indeed. As bad luck would have it, attorney Nat Dryden died on August 26, 1897, before Shelton could be retried. There's no surviving record of the second trial, but it didn't work out well for Stack, because by October 7th, he was doing 25 years hard labor at the Missouri State Pen in Jefferson City. He was paroled in 1909 by Missouri Governor Joseph Wingate Folk, but Shelton broke into a man's home and murdered him, landing him back in prison just 2 years later. He died in the hospital at the Missouri State Pen on March 11, 1912. They were already singing his song in the levees and fields, a song which would be recorded more than 350 times by as many artists in the next 100 years. The first evidence for the song being performed in public was soon after the first trial, when Stack O'Lee was performed by Professor Charles Lee, the piano thumper, the performance of which was noted in the Kansas City Leavenworth Herald in 1897.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.
The song was well known in the African-American communities along the lower Mississippi River by 1910, when musicologist John Lomax received a partial transcription of the song from a woman in Texas who told him this song was sung by the Negroes on the levee while they're loading and unloading the river freighters. And in 1911, 2 versions were published in the Journal of American Folklore by the sociologist and historian Howard W. Odom. In the 1001 Heroes episode, Lead Belly, we talk at length about the efforts of John Lomax and his son to record and document much of the early songs of the South, thanks to a grant from the Smithsonian. The song was first recorded by Fred Waring's Pennsylvanians in 1923, and it became a hit. Another version was recorded later that year by Frank Westphal and his Regalty Novelty Orchestra. And Herb Whiteout and his band recorded the song in 1924. Also in 24, the first version with lyrics was recorded as Skeggily Blues by Lovey Austin. Ma Rainey recorded the song the following year with Louis Armstrong on cornet, and a notable version was recorded by Frank Hutchinson in 1927. Fast forward to New Orleans native Lloyd Price, who 50s vinyl record enthusiasts will tell you was one of the great rockers of his time. He originally scored 6 top 10 hits in 1952-53, then was drafted into the U.S. Army and sent to Korea. While there, he wasted no time putting together a military band and stayed busy touring Korea and Japanese bases, where a part of his stage act involved the retelling of Stagger Lee. As Lloyd recalled, there were hundreds of lyrics for the old song, but no story. While entertaining the troops, I had put together a little play based on it. I'd have soldiers acting out the story while I sang it. When he returned to civilian clothes, Lloyd resettled in Washington, D.C. There he joined with an old buddy named Harold Logan to form KRC Records as a vehicle to relaunch Lloyd's recording career. His song, Just Because, immediately put him back in the top 10 R&B and crossed over to pop when the record was released on ABC Paramount as part of their buyout of KRC. At this point, Lloyd became an ABC recording artist and returned to his New Orleans roots with a rewrite of his old Army skit, this time spelled Stagger Lee. In Korea, Lloyd never thought the playlet could be a hit record, but it soon became a sensation, at one point selling nearly 200,000 copies a day and rapidly shot to number one on the pop charts. But Dick Clark wasn't happy about it. Although Lloyd had appeared on American Bandstand and even Clark's Saturday Night Show with the original version, Dick decided to end the violence. The shooting and blood were too much for his teen TV audience. Lloyd had no choice. He had to go back into the studio and record a whole new, cleaned-up version of the story with, believe it or not, a happy ending. Stagger Lee and Billy actually made up and became friends again. Too bad Billy Lyons wasn't really that lucky. In Tony Cullen's Stagger Lee, A Historical Look at the Urban Legend, Cullen looks at the value of blues music in our folk traditions where Stagger Lee has played a major role. According to Cullen, blues music is a form of African-American folk tradition. It traces its roots to Africa and the Christian gospel influence of the slavery era. As with all forms of folk expression, it relies heavily on traditional myths. Certain characters come back again and again. Blues performers would either copy a previous version, though they would still probably claim authorship, rework the old story to suit their style, or add to it to put a new twist on the story. One such character who shows up all over blues tradition, and from there into blues recordings, R&B, rock and roll, and folk tales, is Stagger Lee. Variously spelled Stack-O-Lee, Stag-O-Lee, Stack-A-Lee, Stacker-Lee, Skiggle-Lee, and others, Stack-O-Lee was always a bad man. Julius Lester, in his Black Folktales, said, Stag-O-Lee as, undoubtedly and without question, the baddest that ever lived. Blues singers had little difficulty with giving Stag all sorts of characteristics. Like Knocking on Heaven's Door for Rock, Stagger Lee was a song which everyone in blues played. There are at least 63 documented recordings, and there are probably more, as well as countless unrecorded live versions. A list of recordings of Stagger Lee is like reading a who's who in blues, with such names as Jesse Fuller, Mississippi John Hurt, Furry Lewis, Mississippi Slim, Ma Rainey, and a host of others. With so many versions, tracing the history of Stag is somewhat difficult. Everyone seems to have an answer as to the origins of the tale, but most sources contradict each other. As with many other blues songs, Stagger Lee eventually made it to R&B and rock and roll. The earliest version of Stagger Lee is neither a blues nor a white folk song, and an obvious bridge to the later rock versions was Lloyd Price's version, which was a hit in 59. In it, he has Stag and Billy gambling in the dark. The fatal argument ensues over an argument about Stag's roll of the dice. Stag threw a 7, and Billy swore that his roll was an 8. Stag gets upset because Billy won his money, and perhaps, more importantly, his Stetson hat. Stag goes home and gets his .44. He goes to a bar, and finding Billy there, shoots him from across the bar. Like many of its folk legend counterparts, like John Henry and Jesse James, the story of Stagger Lee has taken on a life of its own in the past 120 years, and the real story doesn't quite live up to the bad man of legend. We hope you enjoyed this episode of 1001 Heroes, Legends, Histories, and Mysteries. You can enjoy all our shows at podcatcher sites like iTunes and podbay.fm, where you can subscribe free. Doing this puts the show on your favorites tab, and you'll see a reminder there every time we release a new episode. You can also chime in at facebook.com/1001heroes, where our fans like to leave comments and share. Yes, it's Share Our Show Week. You can share it straight from iTunes or from Facebook. We really appreciate shares. It helps our show to grow. Also, we just started a page at patreon.com. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. This is a special funding site where people go and pledge a little bit, as little as $1 a month, to help our show. This is less than a cup of Starbucks to help fund all that we do here, and it is really appreciated. We appreciate you listeners most of all. 1001 Heroes is now heard in over 100 countries, and we are very grateful to have you out there. Until next time, this is your host and storyteller, John Hagedorn, and this is our story.
Oh, cruel Stanley. Police officer, how can it be? You can arrest everybody but cruel Stagger Lee, that bad man, oh cruel Stagger Lee.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.